Welcome to the Hank Haney Podcast, a production of iHeartRadio. Welcome to the Hank Haney Podcast, a production of iHeartRadio. All right, Minnesota Tim is with me today. Minnesota Tim is starting his season off in golf. He has a goal to break 80 this year. Last year, he had the same goal. Did not happen because he listened to too many people, did not pay attention to what I was telling him.
That's not true. It's not true.
That's 100%. A lot of cousins and uncles and everybody you're listening to, and you just ignore the coach, the real coach. You went with smooth, I don't know what else, what other stuff you were doing, but it was mostly smooth is all I ever heard usually. And nothing that had any substance to it. And as a result, you did not achieve the goal. So this year's the same goal, different year. How do you feel about it this year? You're starting to practice. You're starting to get into it. Not listening to me again, I guess. And where are you? Where are you right now in your game? Let's hear about it.
Let me ask you this. What are your credentials as a golf coach?
Oh, my gosh.
Do you have a proven track record?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. You're going to come with that?
I'm asking you a question.
Google it.
Google it.
How about that? Okay. Yeah. There's this thing called Google. Go on Google and you can check it out.
Go on Google. Okay.
I've taught a few good players.
Oh, you've got a few good players.
Yeah, I've taught a few players to break 80, too.
Yeah, really?
The key to breaking 80 is the same key that it is to winning golf tournaments on the PGA Tour. Eliminating these three big keys. Number one, penalty shots. Number two, two chips. Number three putts. You add up your penalty shots, two chips, and three putts, and you subtract that from your score, and you should have a number. If you have capabilities to break 80, you should have a number that gets you under 80 by doing that. But you got to play as close to a clean round that way as you possibly can. Now, that's not necessarily going to be, 100% clean. You're probably going to have a three putt. You might have a two chip. If you do have a penalty shot, hopefully it's not an out of bounds or a stroke and distance penalty, which is really a two shot penalty. But eliminating those mistakes is where you have to start with your game. And then from there, the key would be we've got to hit a certain number of greens. And in your case, the shorter shot you have into those greens, then the better chance you have of hitting the ball on the green. This would be in everybody's case. So if somebody hits a very low number of greens, I would say, okay, how far do you hit the ball? I mean, if you're standing back there with a three wood or a hybrid into every single hole, you're not going to hit a lot of greens. So you have to get the ball to move somewhere out there. And then when you have shorter irons into the greens, then you got a better chance of hitting it on a green. You got to hit, break 80. Somehow you're going to have to hit, maybe 7, 8, 9 greens. If you can do that, you need 6 greens. Let's say, shoot 80. You got to make... you can make 7 bogeys, got to make 11 pars. We hit 6 greens, we got to get up and in 5 times. That's probably a tall order. We got to probably hit 7 greens, get it up and in 4 times and have no bobbles in any of these other areas. And that's how you get to your number. Now, you get lucky, make a birdie. You get, really lucky, you get a chip in or something. Something like that can knock you over the hump, a whole longer putt. But that's really the key. And then, the short game, obviously, because, I'm talking about getting the ball up and in, you got to be able to chip it. And if you're going to chip it close, you're going to do that when you have easier chip shots. So it has to do with course management and where you leave the ball. So these are the keys to lowering everybody's handicap. But for sure, it's the key for you this year, breaking 80, Tim.
Okay.
That's it.
Okay.
Yeah, so you've got to look at every round in that regard. It's not, I want to know what you shot. And then I want to know penalty shots, two chips, three putts. Then I want to know how many greens you hit in regulation. And then I want to know, you know, how many up and ins you had out of how many you had, you know, if you missed 10 greens, I want to know, okay, of those 10 greens, how many did you get up and in?
Mm.
Those are the key statistics you need to keep. And then we work our way from there. That's
okay.
It.
Okay. Well, I found one of the keys to breaking 80 this year, and it's one of my super secret tips.
Should I put this on Haney University, maybe?
Yeah, you should. Yep. Okay. You can call it your super secret tip presented by Minnesota Tim.
Okay.
Okay. So I'm a guy that struggles with the chipping yips from off the green. And one of my super secret tips to avoid the chipping yips is to take my hybrid from off the green and chip it with the hybrid instead of an iron. It comes off a lot smoother. It's a lot more easy to control. And it just puts me a lot closer to the pin. And you know, I'm a dynamite putter. So I am going with a hybrid off the green to start this season. And it is working for me.
Okay. All right. Well, you can't hybrid from a sand trap.
Okay. Well,
you can't hybrid from the rough. Now,
yeah,
you're
can.
In Minnesota. No, you can't.
I have been.
From right on the edge of the rough, just next to the fringe, maybe. But here's the other thing that you're forgetting about. You're still probably freezing your ass off in Minnesota. Is that correct?
Today was cold, but this weekend got up to 60.
Yeah. Okay. So you're freezing your ass off in Minnesota. And as a result, the grass is not really growing yet. So it's just kind of laid down. It's starting to wake up, but it's not there yet. It's for sure not growing. And as a result, it's, you know, kind of matted down from about, you know, 8 feet of snow. And the cold temperatures puts it in a, you know, dormant state, and it's just laying there. So now when you're off the green, you know, you can probably get away with that hybrid thing you're doing from a little farther off the green than you will be able to in the summer. In the summer, you're going to have to pitch the ball. You can't hybrid it through, you know, 3 or 4 inch rough from 10 yards off the green. That's not going to work.
I think you can, though. If you hit it hard enough, you can scoot it through the rough.
Okay, that would be, if that's the technique you're using from 10 yards off the green, you're going to hybrid it through the rough and let it roll onto the green. I can tell you one thing that's not going to happen this summer.
I'm not going to break 80.
That's correct. Well, you're not going to break 80. Yeah, not with that technique. Now, if you hybrid from, you know, off the green on a flat surface, you know, low cut grass, some people do that versus chipping. But if you're going to do anywhere you're going to hybrid from, you can pretty much putt from. You could hybrid from the rough, just where you know, you give it the little hybrid putt chip kind of stroke, and it'll pop it up in the air just a little bit, carry, you know, 6-8 inches to a foot of rough maybe, and roll it, you know, fly it on the fringe and let it roll from there. You can do that. But this is not, this hybrid is a substitute for chipping off the green or putting off the green. It's not a substitute for pitching off the green. And the pitch shot is where you're invariably going to be. You're going to have to pitch it at some point in a round of golf. Multiple times you're going to have to pitch the ball.
Yeah.
So you're going to have to deal whatever this chipping. Now this is the first I've heard you had the chipping yips. Is this is this something you've diagnosed, self-diagnosed? Are you just calling it the chipping yips, or do you actually have the yips?
I have self-diagnosed this.
Humma humma humma.
Yeah.
you got that. You think you have it?
I have the chipping yips. I know I do. I have a little like
you feel a hitch and you get along.
I feel a hitch. I feel like a downward thrust, uncontrollable downward thrust towards the golf ball, and it feels like a hitch.
That's not good.
Yeah.
Has one of your other coaches over there diagnosed this correctly?
They have not diagnosed this.
In Minnesota.
They have not
Nobody
diagnosed
has.
This. I've asked them.
No, but you know it is.
Yeah.
Okay. Then you're, one thing is you're doing that's correct is you're avoiding chipping whenever you can, which is a good thing.
Yeah.
That's number one. But you're still going to have to pitch the ball in the air. So, I mean, that's just got to happen. So we got to deal with that a little bit.
Yep. Working on
it. We'll have to have a, you know what? I think we might need a little video. Maybe send a video into golfschools@hankaney.com And let your man, the great predictor, take a look at this chipping.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
We'll get a report back from him on this.
Okay.
Let's try that. Because that would, and by the way, anybody can do that. Anybody. Just send it in. Your video of your swing, a specific issue you have, putting, chipping, yips, whatever. golfschools@hankhaney.com. You can also register for my free instructional videos at haneyuniversity.com. All right, so that's two things you can do. All right, did you play the other day, or how? Give me a report. How'd you do?
Yeah, I almost broke 80.
So you shot 80?
No. I shot 45 on the front nine, and we only played 9 holes. But I was playing so good that I almost broke 80.
If you shoot 45 times 2.
Yeah.
Is 90.
I know, but I was so close.
You're on pace to shoot 90.
But I was close. I was playing better than my score.
Yeah, you would have had to shoot 34 on the back nine to break 80, Tim. The best score you've ever shot in your life for 9 holes is 39, right?
But this is the difference. One or two bounces go my way on the front nine, and I'm at a 40.
So it's bad luck. Bad luck caused you to shoot 45?
Yes. I'm telling you, it's true.
Boy, oh boy, those must have been really bad bounces.
They were terrible bounces.
What, it just was going in the hole, hit the pin and went out of bounds? Or what did it, it flew in the hole and then went out of bounds in the lake or something? How bad can two bounces be that it cost you 45?
Well, there was one bounce, okay, I just flushed this 3-wood. Okay, I flushed this 3-wood on this par 5. I was going to attack this pin on my third shot. And of course, it goes behind a tree. Now, there was a tree there. I didn't try to hit it behind the tree.
The tree wasn't in the fairway.
All right, it's in the rough on the right side. But it was just right off the fairway.
Okay.
You know, if I was just like a foot to the left, because I don't fluff the ball anymore. I don't do the foot wedge anymore like I used
to. Okay, that's good news.
Yeah, that's good news. I'm just saying that if my ball was 2 feet to the left, I would have had a clear shot at the green. Instead, I hit it to the bunker. I chipped out. I two-putt. I mean, that's a game changer psychologically.
Well, psychologically is one thing, but that probably cost you a couple strokes.
Yeah, it did.
You know, maybe it could have cost you 3. Okay, that's a bad luck. Cost you 3. That could be. All right, what about the other bad luck?
Yeah, and then my putting isn't quite there yet. That's bad luck because this was a different golf course, never played this golf course before. My iron game was just pure as could be. And I 3-putt 2 of my first 3 holes, and I never 3-putt. I never 3-putt.
Well, when you say your iron game was pure, how many greens did you hit in regulation?
I think I hit 3.
Out of 9?
3 out of 9, yeah.
Well, that's not bad. I mean, that'd be 6. You're close. If you could get to 8, you're in business. So just a couple more, and you know, one on each 9, you'd be in a range where you could break 80 with that.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you just do some analysis, like I said. Analyze the things that I talked about: the penalty shots, the 2 chips, the 3 putts. You know how many balls you get up and in. Analyze all those things, and then let's see how you do.
Okay. Right.
All right, good stuff. All right, I want to tell you, you mentioned the bad luck. I want to talk about the Siwoo Kim. Did you see the ruling that he had?
I did see that, yes.
All right. You know, he's the guy that broke his putter at the Masters.
Yeah. He got that idea from me to putt with a 3-wood.
Is that what you're putting with a 3-wood?
Well,
I thought you were using a hybrid.
I am using a hybrid, same thing.
Okay. Sort of the same thing. All right, we'll talk about that next. All right, the 3-wood and the hybrid are not the same thing. Let's go back to that subject.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, I because you told me to, I looked up your credentials on the Google.
Yeah, what does it say?
It says here that you coached Eldrick Tom.
Yeah, that would
Woods?
Be Tiger Woods. Yeah.
Tiger Woods. And O'Mara?
Mark O'Mara. Yeah.
Mark O'Mara.
Yeah. He would be a Hall of Famer.
Oh, okay. So you coached Tiger and Mark.
And over 200 other touring pros. So.
Oh, 200 other ones. Okay.
Yeah. All right. So check that out next time.
Okay.
All right. Yeah, my credentials are okay.
All right.
Listen, and you're gonna find the breaking 80. You gotta focus on what I'm telling you to focus on. It. All right, let's go to Siwoo Kim. I don't know what hole this occurred on, but he was playing with Matt Kuchar. Did you see it? I mean,
I saw the
RBC Heritage.
Yeah,
he putted from off the green. It was a great putt, by the way, from off the green. Using his putter, it must have been a replacement putter because the putter he did have before, his starting lineup putter, was broken at the Masters, which, by the way, was just unbelievable. I mean, when the guy would do that, seriously. He's kind of known as being a little bit of a psycho. made the bad decision at... And it kind of went off mentally at the tournament. Where was that? At the end of the year, Greensboro or something like that. And it was a Wyndham deal or something. Okay, so he went off there, had that tournament seemingly won. Went off there, comes back though, and wins. Where did he win? He won somewhere.
He won a Players Championship.
No, he won a play. Yeah, but he won this year too. Yeah, he won this year.
Yeah, he has 3 PGA Tour wins. This year, he won the American Express.
Yeah, okay, he wins the American Express out in the desert. I knew he did. Okay, so he's had a good year, and he's a talented player. And this guy is like 4 under par at the Masters. Now, I don't know what his expectations were, but he hits a putt he didn't like on the 15th hole at Augusta, and he bangs his putter down on the ground, you know, like holds onto the handle and bangs it down on the ground, and the thing breaks. And he's got a putt, though. How embarrassing is that? He putts the last 3 holes with his 3-wood, which was an interesting choice because a lot of pros would take a sand wedge and they would blade the ball on purpose with the sand wedge because the sand wedge is really, flat on the leading edge. When you hit with a 3-wood, you're hitting, you know, a putter has about 2, 3, 4 degrees of loft. When you're putting with your 3-wood, you're putting with a club that has, 15 degrees of loft, 14, 13 degrees of loft. It's a big difference. And you're also using a club that's very, very long. A putter is like 34, 35 inches long. A 3-wood is like, 42 inches long, something like that. So you're a long way from the ball. You're using a club that's got a ton of loft. And that's why most pros, if they were going to putt with something, they'd putt with their sand wedge. They'd hold it up off the ground and they just purposely blade it. And that way they're using a club that at least is the same length and it's just the same, essentially the same loft because you're just hitting the middle of the ball with the blade of the club. And it was an interesting choice when he putted with 3-wood, but he actually got through the last 3 holes without any severe damage. He didn't make anything, but he didn't start 3-putting like crazy. But he's got his putter back, and he's at the Harbortown RBC Heritage. He's playing with Matt Kuchar. He putts from off the green, and he hits this putt, and it's, going in the hole. And somehow it hangs on the edge and doesn't go in. And, you get the ooh, ah, and, look up at the sky and look up at the caddy. And can you believe that didn't go in? And look at your playing partners. Can you believe that didn't go in? And then you walk slowly to the hole. And then you get to the hole and you look at the ball. And he looks at the ball and it looks like it's half over the hole. And he can't believe it didn't go in. And then, as he starts looking at it and he thinks it's moving, and then his playing partners come up and Matt Kuchar comes up and they look at the ball and they swear it's moving. And then he waits and he waits and he waits. And then, I don't know how long he waited, but it was longer than you're allowed, which is only 10 seconds. And then he finally waits long enough and the ball falls in. And, the players all, came to his defense and said the ball was moving. It looked like it was moving. And then the referee comes in, the official, and he dings him with a one-shot penalty. And that was interesting, to say the least. And then the reaction on social media, on Twitter, and I saw it on JeffShackelford.com, but he's got a lot of, the stuff people said about this. And it's just like, it's the worst rule in the world. It's like, and they just were going off. I mean, really going off. And Matt Kuchar was dumbfounded, which, Matt Kuchar is, he's been around a long time, and he's like springing to Siwoo Kim's defense and like, the ball was moving. What's he supposed to do? Hit a ball that's moving. And, they're just like, you got your certain amount of time and you got, 10 seconds, and the 10 second rule is, we deem it, not have gone in, and you got to putt it, and which makes no sense, because now they all say the ball's moving. You're not allowed to hit a moving ball. It's a two-stroke penalty if you hit a moving ball. And then, everybody else, okay, the rules hawks are like, ruling was correct, and the rules official did a good job, and they explained the rule, and da-da-da-da-da. And it's just another one. And I don't care what the rule says. I don't care what the, rules official, how great he ruled. It just goes to show you how many things, and this is just another example of this, some of these rules in golf that are just plain, just stupid. It makes no sense to people that are watching. You got to hit it within 10 seconds, whether it's moving or not, and yet you're not allowed to hit a moving ball. How is that not contradictory? I mean, it just, so if the touring pros, Siwoo Kim, Matt Kuchar, I don't know who else was in their group, maybe it was just those two, but if those two guys, two seasoned touring pros, PGA Tour winners, both of them, multiple times, Kuchar's played forever, Siwoo Kim's played plenty long enough, neither of them even knows, they're like dumbfounded at the ruling, and yet people write on Twitter, the ruling was correct, but 99% of the people wrote that is a stupid rule, and I don't even play by the rules when I go out to play, and why would you have a rule like that, and what's he supposed to do? I mean, it's just the reaction. It doesn't make sense, and it doesn't make golf look good when you have rules like that. Anyway, what are your thoughts? What do you think?
Well, I think the ruling was actually correct in this one. I think the common sense play here is to call that a penalty. Now, no one is going to charge him a two-shot penalty for hitting a moving golf ball, because nobody thought the golf ball was actually moving. So, in my opinion, the rules official had it right. Everyone thought the golf
ball was moving. Matt Kuchar thought it was moving.
But how can a golf ball move when it's on the edge of the cup?
They're staring at it from, a foot away, and they said it's moving.
It was on the edge of the cup, and I don't get how it can move.
It's getting ready to fall in. It actually did fall in, which means it had to have been moving. I mean, it doesn't just, it fell in. So if you're saying it wasn't moving, then how did it fall in? It's slowly, it's like something that's just in slow motion tipping over. Kuchar, he came to his defense. He said the ball was moving. And the referee's like, well, it doesn't matter. After 10 seconds, it's deemed to have not be moving. The purpose is what? I'm not sure. What's the purpose? To speed up play? What have they done to speed up play, by the way? Okay, they got rid of the 5-minute look for your lost ball rule and changed it into 3 minutes. All right, what does that do? Like, how many groups on the PGA Tour in a round of golf, how many groups you think, there's 150 something players playing, they played threesomes, they got 50 tee times. Of those 50 tee times, how many groups have to hunt for a ball? I mean, so, certainly some of them do, but it's not a big number. It's not like half. It's not like there's 25 groups out there hunting for balls. And just because you have a 5-minute limit to find your ball, I mean, how many of them use the whole 5 minutes? Of the ones that do use the whole 5 minutes, I mean, do they really fall 5 minutes behind? Not necessarily. They can catch up. I mean, you catch up the gap and you're, I mean, I just don't understand how much that time that really saves. You know, that's how you're going to, like, rather than have rules that enforce slow play and say you have to play in this amount of time or you get a true penalty, not a $500 slap on the wrist fine, but a real penalty. I mean, a penalty that costs you a tournament. If you play slow, you get a penalty. No, instead you get a little fine that doesn't bother you at all if you're making what these guys are making. You know, okay, but this is going to, they don't do that. Okay, cool. Which, you know, or they don't say, hey, we're playing in 3.5 hours and everybody needs to finish. And by the way, the last two tournaments, they had to sign off because their time limit was up. The PGA Tour pretty much, you know, tells the television or the television tells the PGA Tour, hey, plan on a, you know, 4-hour fourth round. And then they put their tee time based on the television window. So, you know, say, okay, we're going to play in 3 hours and 55 minutes. We're going to have a 5 minutes for interviews after the tournament, 4 minutes. And this tournament needs to be done by 6 p.m. So the last tee time needs to be at 2 p.m. and go backwards from there. That's how they do it. And the last two tournaments have been so screwed up time-wise, players are playing so slow that they're off the air before the tournament's even finished. All right, now we don't have a rule that says, you know, we're not telling them, hey, you got to play in 3.5 hours. We're not giving them penalties for playing slow. None of that stuff. We're going to speed up the play by eliminating the 5-minute look for your ball, which doesn't affect everybody because not everybody loses their ball. Just a few people do. And we're going to cut that down to 3 minutes. And then we're going to have, in case your ball's hanging over the lip, you can only stand there and look at it for 10 seconds, even if it's moving. And that's how we're going to speed up play. I mean, that's our whole speed up play initiative. That's it. That's the whole kit and caboodle. That's it. And that's what we're doing. And it just makes no sense. I mean, it just makes no sense. I mean, I'm not saying the guy should stand there forever and look at it. I think he should pull over to his partner. If that ball's moving, it's not going to be moving forever. A ball's not going to stay moving for 6 minutes, okay? Or, you know, 26 minutes. It's not going to happen. He pulls over his playing partner and he asks his playing partner, do you see that ball moving? And his playing partner is going to say, yes, it's moving, or no, I don't see it moving. And then at that point, the, you know, guy taps it in. But he pulled over Kuchar, and Kuchar said the ball's moving. And then they let it fall in, and Kuchar backed him up and said it was moving. I don't understand why they have to have a 10-second delay on it. I don't, or a penalty. I don't get it. It just doesn't make, and maybe it makes sense to you. It doesn't make any sense to me.
Well, Hank, I'm going to be quite honest here.
All right.
At the beginning, I was not on your side, but after you explained the PGA Tour's ridiculous slow play policy,
yeah,
and explained further why it shouldn't have been a penalty, I'm on your side. You convinced me over in our debate.
Yeah, okay. And meanwhile, these guys line up putts forever. They, you know, they've got greens reading books. You know, if you want to speed up play, get rid of those stupid greens reading books. You know, there's other things you could do besides get rid of an extra minute to look for your ball. I don't, that rule I don't like, that only three minutes to look for your ball. I don't think that's not, to me doesn't seem equitable. You know, you hit it over on this hole, there's a marshal there, he finds your ball for you. You hit it over on this hole, nobody's there, you got to look for it yourself. Or you got a big gallery playing with this group, they hit it over here, the gallery finds the ball, you hit it, you're playing with in a different group and nobody's following you, you hit it over here and you only got 3 minutes to look for it. And you don't find it and you get the penalty for that. And, you know, I just don't understand how that saves time. And this rule doesn't make sense to me either. But that's my opinion. So you know, but that's why you're listening. So you're listening for my opinion. All right, we got one more thing we're going to talk about, and that is who was it? Billy Horschel.
Billy Horschel.
He wants to.
Yeah, your man.
What did he say?
Your man Billy Ho. He wants to get rid of the arm lock putter.
Well, he wins the match play tournament, and all of a sudden he's like in charge of the rules or something, or what? I mean, he said 73 or 74 and won the match play tournament, and he's, anyway, they should have never allowed it in the first place, but we'll get into that when we come back. Voodoo Pain Relief Cream, if you don't already have it, get it at voodoopainrelief.com. Free 2-week supply for your aches and pains. Rub it on. You'll notice the difference within 5 minutes. You'll see why people rave about the product, and you can try it for free. VoodooPainRelief.com. All right, tell me what Billy Ho said again.
All right, Billy Ho says, I think when you look at what guys are doing now with the arm lock and moving the grips to the side where it's parallel or matches the face, and then when you do that up against your arm, I mean, it's, you know, that face is dead square and that face doesn't rotate at all. It's just sort of locked in. Guys are doing it too good.
Who?
I don't know. Players on the PGA Tour, I suppose.
Who are the guys? I mean, who's doing it? Kuchar does it. What's his putting stat look like?
Bryson does it, right?
Okay, Bryson does it. Kuchar does it. Webb Simpson does it. Will Zalatoris does it. I guess this since he just brought this up, the last one that's, you know, kind of the most notable is the one that did it last, and that's Zalatoris. I mean, Zalatoris obviously has a putting yips, and that's why he found this is what's going to limit his upside potential. The kid's a tremendous ball striker, got a great attitude, got it all. But when you've got arm lock it and then a claw with the arm lock the left and claw with the right, and you're whatever he is, 20 something years old, low 20s, that's not a good sign. And you're limited. Now he's 100th and something in putting. DeChambeau is better than that. He's improved a lot. I mean, but it's not like guys that are using these methods are just, you know, they're all, it's not like they're winning every tournament. It's not like they're lights out. It's kind of a way to play when you've got an issue. Well, it's not kind of a way to play when you have an issue. It is a way to play when you have an issue. And that's something they figured out to help them. And you know what? If it wasn't this way, it's going to be something else. It's going to be some exotic method, because I've said this forever. When you have the yips, you're not going to get out of it being like conventional. I mean, it's just not going to happen. You're going to have to find some way to do it with an unconventional method. And this is what they've come up with. You know, they wouldn't let them put it in their belly. They didn't let them anchor the long putter up to their chin or wherever they were doing it, their chest. So, you know, those were ways that they got away from the yips. And now it's, you know, a locker in the left arm. But it's like every time they turn around, the USJ and their rules are behind. It's like they just don't think about what could happen next. And I don't understand how it's legal either. But I also, you know, just don't understand why they always are behind and why they have to, you know, after, okay, these guys, you know, now we're going to make this illegal. We made the belly putter illegal. We made the anchoring with your chest illegal. We made the anchoring with your chin illegal. Now it's going to be anchored with your arms illegal. I mean, like, it should have never been legal in the first place. You know, you should have to hold on to the club and you should have to swing it. But once you let all this stuff go, come back later. I don't know. I kind of got a problem with that. And the other thing is who gets hurt in this really? Like, I couldn't care less what happens on the PGA Tour. And, you know, these guys play for so much money. It's not like somebody's got some, alternative method and they're just winning every single tournament. That's not the case. You know, who cares? You know, it's like when they got rid of the anchored putter. Who did that hurt? That hurt average golfers who couldn't putt and had found a way to play with the yips. And who are those people? Those are people that pay country club fees, pay cart fees, pay greens fees at public courses. Those are people that use golf as a recreation. That's who it hurt. It didn't make any difference on the professional level. People that were doing that weren't like winning all these tournaments. So all that did was just hurt golf when they got rid of it. Now they want to, you know, do something else to hurt golf. It just, you know, and everybody, and when people come up with opinions, and I mean, I respect Billy Horschel's opinion, that's fine. But when people come up with opinions, they're almost always based on, I mean, almost always based on what is best for me. What's best for me? That's like what's best for me? You know, what would I like? You know, well, I don't use that method. So it'd be, I hope they get rid of it because it doesn't affect me. Yeah, you know, I just, when people have opinions based on everything that's what's best for them, you know, I take it with a grain of salt. I really do. I don't, we had the same situation like the, you know, at the club I belong at. They're talking about, you know, putting in, you know, more, this is an example. This is just an example. Like at country clubs, you have these committees, and whoever gets on the committee will give you an opinion of what they think you ought to do. And the opinion will always be based on what's best for them. And then the board changes every couple years, and here comes a new guy with another opinion that's what's best for him. And, you know, that's the hard thing about being a rules maker is that, I mean, if you're going to really be a rules maker and be a good one, you got to find out what's best for, you know, the majority or what's, you know, best for the quote unquote game. But when they look at the game, they always look at like the best players. What about everybody else? What about the average player? What about the average guy? You know, that's the guy that I look at. Anyway, another one of my opinions, Tim.
I like it. What's in it for me? That's what I want to know.
No, that's what everybody wants to know.
Yeah.
You know, I honestly, I think what's in, like, okay, I'm going to be honest. When I think about something, I think, okay, what would be best for me? And if it would be best for me, then I don't think I should get a vote. Simple.
All right.
Let somebody else decide. You know, let somebody else decide. Because if it's best for me, why am I? Of course I'm going to vote like that. Everybody does. But that guy shouldn't get a vote. My opinion.
Okay, I like it.
All right, Tim. Good stuff. Appreciate you joining me. Follow us on Twitter at Hank Haney, at Tim Perochka. Email your questions and comments to HankHaneyGolf@Outlook.com. Hit the follow button on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts, and you will get our podcast every single day. Hope everybody has a great day. Stay safe, stay healthy, and we will talk to you tomorrow on the Hank Haney Podcast. The Hank Haney Podcast is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.